This week we're jumping back into this series in John's Gospel. Again, we've called it Beholding for Believing. And again, a little over a year ago, we were going through this Gospel five chapters at a time, looking at the words and the works of Jesus. And so structurally, as we've been taking it five chapters at a time, we should actually be concluding this book this spring. But over the next three chapters, chapters 15 through 18, Jesus, he says some really weighty things here that I don't want to just fly over or breeze through as we're trying to conclude this gospel. I want us to sit in these things a little bit and to meditate and to think about and be encouraged by his words to his followers on the last night and last week before his death. And so from now until just after Easter, we're going to be going through John chapters 15 through 18, where Jesus is spending, again, his last night with his disciples. And over the past few chapters, since chapter 13, we've seen that he's been talking to them about his departure. One of them, he tells them, is going to betray him, and another of them is going to deny him. He's talked about how, although he's going away, he's not going to leave them alone as orphans. He's going to come to them. He's talked about how he's going to come back for them, and God is going to send his Spirit to live and dwell in them, to remind them of Jesus' words, to remind them of his works, to comfort them, to counsel them. He's also spent his time, this time, encouraging and commanding them to love one another. He's leaving them with this great commandment and to obey what he's told them. And now here in the next few chapters, Jesus is going to continue telling them about what it looks like for them as his followers, to follow him even after he's gone. And so if we look at this entire section, in chapters 15 through 18, even this last discourse that we see Jesus having with his followers, if we could give that section a heading, it might read this: Discipleship in the Dark Times. Discipleship in the Dark Times. But we don't want to be fooled by that title. This isn't going to be really depressing and down and out and trying to encourage ourselves through, again, Jesus' death, his pending, impending death. We don't want to be fooled by that title, because Jesus says a lot of things here over the next few chapters about his followers having and experiencing real joy and confidence in God, even in the midst of seasons of uncertainty and suffering. So we're going to start to see that today in chapter 15, verses 1 through 11. And when I read these verses this week, it just reminded me of something in several articles that I had read over the past few years that keep talking about the growing number of young adults, ages 25 through 34, who are choosing, for a myriad of reasons, not just for mooching, to live with their parents as adults. Now, researchers call this one type of shared household. But almost 40% of adults between the ages of 25 through 34 live in a shared household with their parents, again, for numerous reasons. Now, be honest, those of you of older generations are probably frowning on this. Y'all are hating hard on this reality. Maybe those of you with grade school kids are getting nervous about this, worrying about this might happen to you. It screams the complete opposite of raising or being raised to be an independent adult, right? Overall, I think this kind of movement reflects to some degree what Jesus is getting at as he's painting a picture for his disciples of life for his followers, even after he's physically gone from them. See, Jesus, he's not the parent or the teacher or the authority figure who's looking to throw his people out to the world and to the wolves to fend for themselves, so that they might cultivate some kind of independence from him and produce a life of their own apart from him. Now, he encourages them to depend on him. And he emphasizes here that to be a disciple means fully depending on him, not just for effectiveness as or Christian character as a disciple, but for spiritual life, for eternal life. Jesus is encouraging dependency. And if he had to summarize it in one word here in verses 1 through 10, we see that it's the word that he uses nine times in these verses. The word abide. Abide. So abide is a word that means to remain or to stay. It means to put your feet up, to make yourself comfortable, to stick around. So maybe you've done this before when you're on the phone and you're talking to somebody and you want to politely end the conversation without being too abrupt. One of you is on the other end of the phone. You say, well, I'm not going to hold you, you know? Or maybe you say, I'm going to let you go after this. Preachers do that, right? I got one last point. I just want to tell you one more thing, then I'm going to get you off the phone. Or maybe you're visiting someone's house before, and after you've been there for a while, maybe you've been there, you've overstayed your welcome a little bit, and the host asks you, so what you about to do after this, right? Again, I've used this illustration before, but if you've heard that, there's the hint, there's the clue. You're being asked to leave. Neither of those things is invitations to abiding. Telling someone to abide is when the host sits back and gets more comfortable when the conversation hits a stale point. It's when they offer another drink or ask you if you want some food. Asking someone to abide is to say, stay as long as you'd like. I've got nowhere else to be, nowhere else I want to be. Stick around. That's what Jesus is saying here to his followers. And so this conversation on this last night with them isn't him figuratively getting their coats, right? Hey, y'all getting ready to leave? Let me go grab your stuff as he's preparing to depart from this world. No, he's inviting them to stay with him, spiritually speaking. And he uses this illustration in verses 1 through 2 to explain that. So here's what we're looking at today in these 11 verses. Firstly, we'll see an illustration of abiding. Secondly, we'll see an explanation of abiding. Thirdly, we'll see the foundation of abiding. And fourthly, the destination of abiding. Illustration, an explanation, the foundation, and the destination of abiding. So look at verses 1 through 2. We see this illustration. Jesus gives this illustration of abiding where he says, I am the true vine and my Father is the vine dresser. Now, Jesus, he doesn't randomly come up with this illustration of the vine. Some people think that when he said back in chapter 14, verse 31, rise, let us go from here, that he and his disciples literally got up, they left the room, and they started walking around Jerusalem, this city in this place where there would have been numerous vines, especially walking to the Garden of Gethsemane. But there's more to this illustration than just the scenery. Maybe he is alluding to that. But there's more to this illustration in that the vine is also a reference. It's a reference to something that Jesus wants to say about himself. And we've seen this all throughout the Gospel of John. It's a reference to something that we see in the Old Testament. You look at Psalm chapter 80. The writer of the psalm says this. You brought a vine out of Egypt. You drove out the nations and planted it. You cleared the ground for it. It took deep root and filled the land. The mountains were covered with its shade, the mighty cedars with its branches. It sent out its branches to the sea and its shoots to the river. Why then have you broken down its walls so that all who pass along the way pluck its fruit? The boar from the forest ravages it, and all that move in the field feed on it. And the next stanza of the psalm goes on to say this. The people are collectively coming together, and they're petitioning to the Lord. They say, turn again, O God of hosts. Look down from heaven and see. Have regard for this vine, the stock that your right hand planted, and for the son whom you have made strong for yourself. They have burned it with fire. They have cut it down. May they perish at the rebuke of your face. But let your hand be on the man of your right hand, the son of man whom you have made strong for yourself. And we shall not turn back from you. Give us life and we will call upon your name. So who is this psalm referencing? Who is it talking about? It's talking about Israel, the people of God. They are the vine. They're a vine that God delivered and planted, but they're also a vine that faced God's judgment because of their sin. But we see in the second stanza that they collectively cry out to God together to have mercy on them in this judgment because they're his vine. They're his vine that he has planted, and they are his son who he has delivered. And they also appeal to God's right-hand man, the Son of Man who God has made strong for himself. They've appealed to him for their deliverance. If we fast forward, we know, as we see it all throughout the life and ministry of Jesus, that he is God's right-hand man. He is God's perfect and only begotten Son. He is the true vine, as he says in chapter 15, verse 1. He's the true vine that the hand of the vine dresser is on. And Jesus in himself does what Israel and what sinful people like you and I could never do, and that is to be perfectly acceptable before the vine dresser. So that's what verse 1 points to. Jesus, he is the fulfillment of what Israel was supposed to be, but he's also the vine because he is the source of life and nourishment for God's people, through which God is glorified, which is what he gets at in verse 2. He says, every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away, and every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes or cleans, that it may bear more fruit. So what's the goal of this whole scenario? What's the aim of the vine dresser? The vine dresser is ultimately after fruit from this vine. And this illustration shows us that there are implications both for branches that bear fruit and branches that do not bear fruit. So in this process, the vine dresser would typically cut off and remove branches that didn't produce grapes or whatever fruit that was coming from this vine. And then they cut or clean or prune branches that did produce grape clusters so that there wouldn't be an overcrowding of fruit on the branch, which could reduce the quality of the fruit overall. So the urging and the encouragement of this illustration is to, again, as he's talking to people like us and his followers, as branches connected to the vine, abide in the vine. That's the illustration. Abide in the vine. Stay connected to the vine. Produce fruit as branches connected to the vine. That's the illustration. And so Jesus goes on to expand on this concept of abiding in him as the vine in verses 3 through 7. We now see the explanation of abiding. But before we look at that, let me just spend a moment focusing on the role of the vine dresser, because if we understand what he's doing in this process, then we'll understand the importance of Jesus' command to us as branches to abide in the vine. Who is this vine dresser? Well, we know it's the Father. And the vine dresser oversees the vine's growth and health by pruning it or cleaning it. The pruning process that the vine dresser performs is one that is super committed. It's one that's really invasive. Every cut that the vine dresser makes to the branches involves intentional thought and concern for the overall health of the vine to produce what the vine dresser is after, fruit. So a lot of things go in through the vine dresser's head as he's processing and thinking about what it looks like to cut or prune branches that produce fruit. The vine dresser is thinking about factors like the weather. What happened to the vine the previous year? What happened to the branch the previous year? The potential for disease, the shade, the heat. And each cut to the branches has implications for that branch and for the vine for years to come. And what we can see about the vine dresser in this case is that he is deeply committed to the vine. And so as branches, what it means to be an abiding branch is to be constantly, intentionally, carefully, and lovingly worked on by this vine dresser, worked on by God for his good purposes, ultimately for our experiencing joy and eternal life, and our bearing fruit in this world. So that means if we're disciples, if you and I, if we are followers of Jesus, then it means that Jesus is the vine, that he is central, not us. We serve him. Our bearing fruit serves the vine dresser, serves the vine. God the Father and God the Son and God the Spirit, they are the ones who are central in our lives. It's for the vine dresser that we exist. The vine. He's the one who gives our lives relevance and meaning, definition. And so abiding in Jesus, it isn't ultimately about ourselves as central. And even this pruning process, right? It's not necessarily about God working on us to get what we want out of life. That's not what Jesus is saying here when he's instructing us to abide. Abide so that your life will be according to whatever definition you deem as successful and however you define bearing fruit. No, it's about what the vine dresser wants. It's about the fruit that the vine dresser wants for his purposes, for the health of the vine. So to be an abiding branch in the vine, it means to be acted on. It means that God is actively working on us, in us, in our lives, to ultimately bear fruit that is pleasing to him. It's to be acted on initially in the moment that we believe and trust Jesus and our hearts are transformed by his words. But it's also to be continually acted on by God through the entirety of our lives for his glory and for our joy. That's what it means to abide. So that now leads us to the first thing that Jesus explains about what it means to abide in him that we see in verse 3. Jesus says to the disciples that they are already clean because of the word that he has spoken to them. Which means that the message of Jesus, his ministry, particularly through his words and his works, it has taken root in their hearts, connecting them to the vine, causing them to abide. It's the same affirmation that Jesus previously said back in chapter 13, verse 10, when he was washing their feet and said, "You're already clean because of the word that I've spoken to you." So the first thing that Jesus wants for us to see is that believing Jesus' words and trusting him is what it means for us to abide. His word ultimately finding a place and rooting itself in our hearts and our lives. And the question for us is, have his words taken root in our lives? When we see these words, when we read them, when we watch and with the eyes of faith his works and behold his greatness, does it lead us to believing him, to entrusting ourselves, the entirety of ourselves, to him and to what he says? Do we see him as the way and the truth and the life? The only way to access and justification before God? Have his words taken root in our lives? Have they had a transformative effect on us in our hearts? See, brothers and sisters, you and I, we can know that we're abiding in Jesus. We can know that we are connected to the vine when Jesus and his words are living and abiding in us. Do these words have any effect on us? When we hear them, are we challenged? Are we corrected? Do we submit to his words? Do we see them not just as words of advice? Truthful words, but maybe only some of the truth that we define. Or do we see his words as truth? As the way to God? Words to live by and submit ourselves to. That's what it means for his words to abide and live in us. The next thing that we see about abiding here is that it means dependency. Look at verses 4 through 5. The abiding that Jesus is talking about here, it's mutual. Meaning that as his words abide in us, consequently we abide in him. And we continue to abide in him as his words abide in us. And so although that there's this mutual abiding taking place within those who are followers of Jesus, our abiding in him is dependency. It is full dependency. We need him. And that's what it means when Jesus communicates the fact that we are branches in this illustration. Our very nature as branches connected to the vine means that we are insufficient for producing fruit on our own. We need this vine to live, to be effective. In one sense, we need to be connected to the vine in order to bear fruit, whether that is fruit of obeying God, whether that's fruit of cultivating godliness, pursuing godliness, or cultivating God's character within us. When it comes to turning from our sin and even continuing to trust in Jesus, we need to be connected to Jesus in order to see that take effect in our lives. without abiding in Jesus, none of these things happen. We don't do these things on our own. But even more than that, without abiding in Jesus, we have no fellowship with God. We have no life, no acceptance before Him. And brothers and sisters, if we're honest, the messages that we hear from the world around us, the things that our hearts are so prone to believe as its default, the lies that we're so prone to believe is the lies are the lies of independence. That you and I can and should somehow reach this enoughness. That we should be able to cultivate fruit on our own. That we should be able to gather enough good works, enough truth, enough morality on our own to stand on our own two feet and present ourselves acceptable either before God or before others. And we do that through so many different ways. We believe this lie about our independence, that through our own efforts, through our own definitions of truth and morality, we can become our own vine and bear whatever fruit will give us acceptance and justification either before God, before others, or before the world. And Jesus says, that's not how this works. Look at what he says here. He says, I am the vine, and you are the branches. We need him. He's not a branch that comes alongside of us and our vine and seeks to help us bear whatever fruit that we deem is necessary for our justification before God. He is the vine, and we are the branches. In another sense, abiding is about dependency, because if we're not dependent on this vine, if we're not dependent on Jesus, then what Jesus says through this illustration here is that there's nothing left for us. There is no us. There's no you. There's no me outside of this vine. There's no life. There's no enoughness. There's no meaning outside of this vine, which is why Jesus says in verse 4, the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine. Or in verse 5, he says, apart from me, you can do nothing. And then jump to verse 6. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch that withers. And the branches are gathered and thrown into the fire and burned. Listen, as branches on our own, we can do nothing. You see, Paul says this in another way in Ephesians, where he says you are dead, spiritually dead in your trespasses and sins. You're walking around alive. But internally, spiritually before God, we are unresponsive. There is nothing that we can do to generate life on our own. So in this world that's wired to look for fruit and all kinds of things like our own kind of personal authenticity, or our individual expressions of ourselves, are looking for fruit through our achievements, are looking for fruit through our own definition of truth and meaning, are looking for fruit through our own shallow identities. God the Father, God the Son, and God the Spirit, as the vine dresser, they point us to where the true fruit is. It comes from this vine, Jesus. So, brothers and sisters, whatever it is that we think we have, however good it may look or appear, however much we believe these things to be worth, if we are branches that are not abiding in this vine through believing Jesus, trusting his word, submitting ourselves to him, if that's not us, then there's nothing but worthlessness and destruction for us. Independence, as we talked about in our kingdom series, independence isn't a core value of the kingdom. Listen, let's not forget the context here. Jesus isn't talking to or about people who don't believe him. He's talking to his followers. He's talking to the people who profess to believe him. And listen, if we're the kind of followers who are only interested in consulting Jesus when we deem it necessary or convenient, if we're the kind of followers who choose to rely on our own wisdom primarily and then take advice from Jesus whenever we deem it fit, if we're the kind of followers who seek to determine our own strategy for life and independence and we invite Jesus to come alongside of that quest and that pursuit, then our trajectory is one that is headed towards withering and eternal punishment. We're either in the vine or we're nothing. This vine defines everything for us, to us. That's what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Our lives are oriented around the truth and the reality that He is central. He must be central, or we have nothing. We are nothing. And if we're these kind of branches that believe that we can establish independence on our own, then we can turn, and we should turn, from our selfish independence. We can turn from trusting in our own wisdom, trusting in our own efforts. And we can believe what Jesus says about Himself here, that He is the vine. And that it's through Him that we are acceptable. We bear fruit before God that is pleasing. So what does it look like for us as followers of Jesus, as disciples, to live dependently and to live confidently? Because dependence on someone or something, right, that's contrary to what we've been taught. To use that illustration, abiding in mom's basement at age 34 is never a reason to hold your head high in this world. But listen, according to Jesus, there's a lot to be glad about when we abide in Him. There's a lot to be joyful about. There's a lot to throw our arms up on the couch and our feet up on the coffee table and relax with a smile on our faces when we abide in Him. Dependency is displayed in several different ways, but it's ultimately displayed here in this passage, primarily through prayer. Look at verse 7. Jesus says, if we abide in Him, then we can ask for whatever we wish. That's prayer. It's taking a posture of going before God humbly. It's the language of faith, the language of trusting in God, trusting in Jesus as being all sufficient, all satisfactory, and saying, this is what I need, and you've got it. This is the language of prayer. It expresses our dependency, but this here is also a promise. And ultimately, this is how fruit comes. This is how fruit comes. Not by your working hard on your own, not by your cultivating independence from the vine to try to get together enough to present before God as being acceptable, but it's through asking Him. Asking Him for whatever it is that you need for life and for godliness. And God grants it. That's a promise. This is how fruit comes. So for a moment, we see these scriptures. Just step back. Just wait here for a second before our minds try to put all of the theological qualifiers on this, because we hear about so many prosperity gospels that say, you can ask for $1 million and a new car and whatever it is that you need, and God is going to give it to you exactly how you ask for it. Things like that cause us to be hesitant. Maybe to be a little bit afraid because we haven't seen our requests answered like we want them to in our lives. For a moment, just listen to Jesus. Listen to Him as the all-sufficient vine. Believe His words. Believe Him. Trust Him. And think right now, what is it that you need? What is it that you really need? Ask. Do you need peace? Do you need reconciliation? Do you need joy? Do you need life? Resources? Do you need a quenching for your anxiety or your depression? Do you need to be reminded that you are accepted and loved as God's child, no matter what you've done or what you've failed to do? You can ask as you sit on this eternal couch in God's house, abiding in this vine. You can ask Him for whatever you need. Listen, if we are abiding in Jesus and if His words are abiding in us, right? One of the implications of that is that His words shape our desires. They shape our interests. They shape our priorities. So that the psalm says, delight in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. If our desires are aligned with our delighting, there's nothing that we can't ask for. That God will hear us because of Jesus and he will give us to produce fruit in our lives. Brothers and sisters, let's not let independence keep us from the blessings of abiding and depending on the right one. The one who is worthy to be depended on. Let's not let the fear of disappointment drive us further into independence or silence when it comes to prayer. Abiding in Jesus, one of the ways that our dependency is expressed in God is through prayer. This expression of full dependence on God to do what you and I can't. Next thing that we see here about abiding is that it means assurance. Look at the next half of the promise that Jesus just made. He says, and it will be done for you. Again, think about that. Rest in that. The assurance that comes from that promise. That's only as good as we see God for who he powerfully is and has revealed himself to be, especially in the greatest work of forgiving our sins, uniting us with him, giving us fellowship with him, promising us an eternal hope and a future with him forever, crushing our sin. Abiding in Jesus means that we can rest confidently in the vine and in the vine dresser's care for us. Now, again, this isn't saying that things are always going to go exactly how we want them to or that God functions like some kind of genie for us. Again, it points to the vine dresser and the fact that he is deeply committed to whatever it is that we need, that you need as branches on this vine in order to produce whatever he intends. God is committed to that, deeply committed and invested in you to produce fruit that is glorifying to him. He's not going to leave you alone. He's not just going to let you try to produce fruit on your own. He's checking in on you. He's coming for you in his love and his grace, even in his discipline at times, because he is deeply committed to this vine and its branches to display something about himself to the world, to give you and I joy and satisfaction ultimately in him. He is for us. He is for you. Do you trust in this promise? Do you believe this promise? Because if we do, then it makes abiding a whole lot easier. There's no suspicion as to when Jesus is going to look at his clock and go get our coats. There's no pressure to perform. There's no quotas to fill. Again, brothers and sisters, independence, it often leaves us with uncertainty and restlessness because it's all on us to produce fruit. It's all on us to produce results. But listen, there is certainty in abiding. There's assurance in abiding. And there is certainty in this kind of dependency on Jesus. In abiding, by abiding in Jesus, we have access to God. We have a favorable position before God that you can't contribute any more to and that you can't take away. It comes to us through Jesus. And even more than that, we see that God's ability, his power, his commitment is backing us when our desires are aligned with his. There's nothing in the world that can separate us from his love. There's nothing in the world that can stop us to being conformed more into the likeness of Jesus. There's nothing in this world that can quench or shut out or crush the eternal reality of your life with God forever. Nothing. God is deeply committed to ensuring that you and I will live forever, both now in this world and forever, even after this age is over. So now we move on. Let's see the foundation of abiding. Look at verse 8. We've seen both the illustration of abiding and the explanation of abiding. And in verse 8, we see the foundation of abiding. What's at the root of Jesus' commandment to us to abide is God's being made known to the world, his being glorified. So when we abide in Jesus, we bear fruit according to God's promise, purposes, because of our union with the vine, and this bearing fruit also proves that we're connected to the vine. Again, whatever the fruit, whether it's the fruit of godliness or repentance in our life or the cultivation of God's character in us, or even as Jesus goes on to say, even if it's the fruit of us loving one another, as we'll see next week, when we bear this fruit as a result of our abiding in the vine, then we're saying something beautiful to the world about who God is. That's what the church does. It shows and displays the character of God to the world. It invites the world to come in and see this is what is happening. This is the most cutting-edge thing that the universe has ever seen. Reconciled sinners who once hated God, reconciled and brought in peace with God and with one another. And that's ultimately displayed in our loving one another. We say something beautiful to the world about who God is, his character, his person, his work. But also in bearing fruit and abiding in Jesus, we are pointing to Jesus. We're showing him to be ultimately sufficient and exclusive, the way, the truth, and the life. We're saying something about where true life is found, where true direction and meaning is found, where true joy and satisfaction and peace and happiness and righteousness and justice is found. We point to him as being worthy and sufficient for us. God's being glorified is at the very foundation of what it means for us to abide. And the next thing at the foundation of our abiding is the love of God. Look at verses 9 through 10. Jesus paints this scenario. He says the Father loves Jesus. And from eternity and throughout his life and ministry on earth, we see that Jesus abided in God's love. He's obeyed his Father perfectly. He's only done the works that he sees his Father doing. And he has been unflinching in his accomplishing his Father's will. And with that love, that great love with which the Father loves Jesus, Jesus says, I have loved you. Again, this isn't just human kind of love. This isn't the human love that we display to one another in brotherly love or affection or romance or any kind of thing. This transcends that. As the Father has loved Jesus from before the foundation of the world infinitely, a love that cannot be exhausted, a love that has no shadow of turning, a love that delights, a love that's joyful and happy and committed. Jesus loves us with that same kind of love. And Jesus wants us, he's telling us here, he wants us to abide in him, and he wants his words to abide in us because he loves us. This is what he's telling his followers on the last night before he leaves. Stay, stick around, I love you, I want you here. Jesus wants us to remain in him and stay with him perpetually, permanently. He's not pushing us away when you mess it up, when you fail or fall short for the 1,000th time. He's not pushing you away when you establish your own independence and morality apart from him, when you've cultivated enough good habits to live on your own. It's not what he's doing. He's pulling us closer. Stay, abide. Bear fruit and continue to bear fruit. Listen, abiding isn't formulaic. It's relational. Love is at the foundation of this invitation to abide and bear fruit for God. And in addition to this love, rather as a result of it, obedience is at the foundation of abiding. See, Jesus, out of love for his Father, he keeps his Father's commandments and abides in his love. And it's out of love, our love for Jesus and our love for his Father, that we will keep his commandments and remain in him. Again, this isn't keep my commandments and then you'll abide. This is abide. And naturally, an outflow of that is that you will keep my commandments. You will submit to my word. You will do what I ask, Jesus says. You'll continue to remain in me. So brothers and sisters, this is important because without God's glory and God's love at the foundation of our being in Jesus, you and I will be on this never-ending quest trying to abide in Jesus in attempt to earn God's love. We'll try to abide through obeying in order to secure God's love. We'll try to abide through our performance in order to make God love us more. Trying to earn assurance that we are in this vine. We're connected to it. Or even more than that, we'll believe the lie that we only abide in Jesus when we prove that we're worthy enough. Don't listen to those lies. That kind of posture, that kind of living and working, trying to abide, trying to earn love, trying to earn acceptance, that kind of posture is one of independence. And that kind of posture shows that we are branches that can't do anything if we're looking to live by that. Listen, abide, believe, trust. Put your feet up on his couch. Extend your hands and say, I will take whatever it is that you give me. Just let me listen and love you, Jesus. That kind of posture of humility, of surrender, of believing him supremely. That kind of posture brings transformation that causes us to obey, that causes us to want to stay and remain in God. Lastly, and I'm not going to hold you after this. In verse 11, we see the destination of abiding. Jesus says this, these things I have spoken to you that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full. The destination of our abiding in Jesus is one that is experiencing joy, but not just our human circumstantial joy that comes and goes according to our experiences. When good things happen to us, we're joyful. When someone does something nice to us and for us, we're joyful. We're joyful when we achieve what we want. We're joyful when we worked hard enough. We're joyful when we can look back at our lives or look forward to our future and see that, hey, it's bright. I have something to be joyful about. But we know that that joy, that human joy, is very fragile and fickle. It comes and goes. It's threatened by the smallest realities and things. Suffering, weakness, sin, being sinned against. So the destination of our abiding in Jesus is experiencing Jesus' joy. He speaks to us. His words abide in us. We abide in him, and as a result, his joy fills us. And again, look at the context. Even though this is the last week of Jesus' earthly life, with these really deep moments filled with sorrow and sadness, what he's saying is that there's still joy in this room. There's not just joy for the disciples, for his followers. There's a joy that is set before Jesus in all of this. He's sorrowful, but yet he is rejoicing, a pattern that Paul calls us to follow and calls us to embrace as followers of Jesus. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2 tells us that it was Jesus' joy, this joy that was before him, that caused him to endure what was coming. Immense suffering, an unjust trial. Mocking, beating, shame, bearing our guilt, and ultimately the cross, where he would not just bear the most intense physical suffering in your place and bear the death that you and I deserve to die, but he would bear the punishment and the penalty for our sin. All the times where we've tried to be independent and have failed, all the times where we've turned our back on God and rejected him and rejected his words, where we disobeyed him flagrantly in our motivations and our thoughts and our actions and our words. For the joy that was set before Jesus, he would go to the cross for his followers, for people like you and I. And he would eventually be seated at God's right hand. As his vine, as his son, through whom you and I can now experience the joy of God and the joy of Jesus. It's because joy was set before him in his enduring that you and I can have joy in our enduring through the dark times, through sin or through suffering. Whatever it may be, Jesus offers you the real joy, not a hollow promise, not something that might happen along the way, but a secure reality, a treasure within this earthen vessel. And if you believe him, he offers you joy to the full. Not a shallow happiness, not something that's going to ignore or try to do away with all the problems and real realities that we face of sin and suffering, all the things that go on in this world, but a joy that serves as an anchor that will cause us to endure, that will cause us to bear fruit and glorify God as we abide in Jesus. This is an eternal joy that Jesus wants to purposefully give us through our abiding in him. You need this joy. You need this joy, brothers and sisters. You're not going to find it anywhere else. A bunch of things, a bunch of people offer us that joy out there. We even think we can attain this ourselves. You can't. All other joy, it won't fill. It won't overflow. It's fickle and undependable. Our joy doesn't last, but his does. So listen, whether you would associate yourself with Jesus and believe him and trust him, or whether you're in here today and you don't know if you could say that's true for yourself, the call for us is to abide in him. Surrender. Stop the independence. Stop the game and the quest. Stop working to earn God's joy or approval or bearing whatever fruit you think will justify you. Hear Jesus' words throughout this gospel. Hear his words here in this passage, where he has said in the past that he's the bread of life. He's the living water. He's the light of the world. And he is the life-giving vine. Turn from trusting in yourself, believing that in your independence you can bring joy and happiness and meaning and worth to yourself. Turn from trusting in your abilities. Turn from your sin. Turn even from thinking that you've outsinned God's grace or that you're unworthy to abide in him. Accept his invitation to abide. Let his words take root in you. And out of that, you will be a branch that glorifies God, that displays his character, and that he is deeply committed to for life, for joy, for peace with him forever. Let me pray for you.